few minutes earlier, Myra had pressed her cheek up against the Winchester's stock and aimed down into the canyon, trying to find a target. But then, she heard a man yell. On the heels of the yell, a rifle had thundered. There had been more yells and more shooting. Myra's heart had raced. She'd hoped Jade accomplished her task. Myra had waited, staring down the Winchester's barrel into the canyon. She'd spied movement to the corner of her right eye and had lifted her head suddenly. Myra saw a hatless, muddy-faced man poke his big head and a rifle out around the side of a boulder maybe 50 feet away on her right. Baldinger held the rifle a little awkwardly, as though his right arm or shoulder was injured. Myra jerked her head down, pressing her chin against the ground. As she did, the rancher's rifle barked. Myra felt the bullet part the hair at the crown of her skull before it thudded into the ground a few feet on her left.
Damn it!
Myra heard him jacking a fresh round into his Winchester's breech. Myra rolled up closer to her covering rock and pushed up onto her knees, raised the rifle, aimed at Baldinger, who was now aiming back at her around the side of the rock, and fired. Myra's Winchester was empty. She'd left the cartridges inside. Myra pulled her head down behind the rock a half second before the rancher's own rifle barked. The bullet spanged shrilly as it slammed into the very top edge of Myra's rock, pelting her with stone shards. She heaved herself to her feet and ran as hard and fast as she could for the cabin.
Nowhere to run, Miss Myra. Your trail ends here.
Myra glanced over her shoulder to see Baldinger step down from his perch in the rocks and stride toward her, limping slightly against the pain in one or maybe both hips.
No!
Myra approached the cabin. She fumbled the door open, ran inside, saw a box of 44 cartridges on the table before her. Someone up high was looking out for them. She slammed the door, then hurried to the table. She set the rifle on the table and picked up the cartridge box. Her hands shook so bad that just as she opened the box, she dropped it, spilling the entire box partly on the table and partly on the floor. Myra reached for a cartridge rolling around on the table, but she did not get the bullet into the Winchester's loading gate before she heard loud footsteps just outside the cabin. The cabin door exploded inward. Myra wheeled to see Baldinger's big frame fill the entire doorway, silhouetted against the gray light behind him. Baldinger raised his Winchester to his shoulder.
Death to you, little girl!
He tightened his gloved hand around the Winchester's neck, narrowing one eye as he aimed down the barrel. Myra stumbled backward against the table, raising her hands and turning her face to one side, awaiting the bullet with the most profound dread imaginable. The rifle roared. Myra convulsed. The rifle roared again. Beneath the ringing in her ears, Myra was vaguely aware of no bullets having ripped into her. Myra opened her eyes to see Baldinger stumbling back out the door, lowering his rifle to his side, his head wobbling on his shoulders, his eyes wide with shock and horror. Blood oozed from two ragged holes in his chest. Suddenly, Baldinger stopped stumbling and stood still. Well, not still. His body sort of quivered in place. Myra whipped her head around to see Dell sitting up on the cot, his six-shooter clenched in his right fist and aimed over Myra's head at the open doorway. Smoke curled from the barrel.
Baldinger!
Myra turned her head to stare through the open door. Baldinger shifted his feet, turned his big body awkwardly to face the opposite direction. As he did, Myra saw Jay striding up to him, holding her rifle down low by her right side. When she was 10 feet away from the rancher, she stopped. Fury sparked in her eyes as she cocked and raised the Henry rifle and pressed the butt to her shoulder. Then narrowed her right eye, she aimed down the barrel at the rancher's head. The Henry roared. Baldinger's head fairly exploded, jerking backward sharply a fist-sized chunk of the back of his head, along with a good bit of brains and blood spewing onto the ground behind him. The rancher opened his right hand, dropped his rifle straight down to the ground, He rocked back and forth on the heels of his boots, and then, as though finally making a decision as to which way he wanted to go, he fell backward, struck the ground heavily without even breaking his fall. Myra shuttled a shocked gaze from the rancher, who lay still, gazing sightlessly straight up at the sky, to Jay, who slowly lowered his smoking Henry. She turned from Jay to Dell, who slowly lowered his smoking six-shooter.
Dell!
Myra's heart still raced. Dell gave a crooked smile.
How's my girl?
Again, Myra looked at the dead rancher. Myra looked at Jay, who stood smiling at her from the spot from which she'd shot Baldinger. Then Myra turned to Dell and smiled, her heart only now beginning to slow.
Better now.
Myra went to her man.
Why the special interest?
Pecos turned to Slash, keeping his voice low, though there was no way the six Talon Renfro men at the bar could overhear him with the din in the San Juan Hotel saloon as loud as it was.
Suppose they recognize us?
Nah. Maybe they know we're here to kill him.
Slash smiled across the smoky saloon and pinched his hat brim at the two Renfro men who had turned to face him and Pecos and were scowling at them dubiously. That the six were Renfro's men, there could be no mistake. True. There were six down there, not seven, which was the total number of men in the gang. But that just meant Talon Renfro himself was likely upstairs doing only God knew what to Fanny Diamond. No, Slash thought he knew what he was doing all right. Slash glanced at Pecos and beckoned with his head.
Come on, let's have a seat and figure out a way for one of us to get upstairs.
They'd only just taken a seat at a table, roughly halfway between the front door and the bar, when a pretty girl had been making the rounds, enduring several slaps to her rear and taking a few puffs off one of the patron's long black cigarillos, stopped just off Slash's right elbow. She tugged Slash's hat brim over his eyes.
Hello, handsome. Where have you been all my life?
Slash poked his hat brim back up away from his eyes and looked at the plump little gal. Oval-faced, dark-skinned, brown-eyed, and with long, coarse, coal-black hair. Likely Mexican with some Indian blood. She filled out her skimpy attire right well. She was too coarse-featured to be called pretty, and she had a small scar on the nub of her right chin as well as pimple scarring on her cheeks and forehead. Still, she was not hard on the eyes. Even if she were, Slash would have still said exactly what he did now.
Darling, I've been wondering that same thing.
Slash shoved his chair back and rose, extending his right elbow.
What do you say we go upstairs and get to know each other?
Oh, mierda.
She hooked her arm through his.
You don't take much coaxing, but you must pay at the bar first, handsome.
How much, little gal?
For me, $10.
She gave a slow, seductive blink of her eyes, then reached up to straighten Slash's crooked ribbon tie.
And I am worth every penny. Soon you shall see, and you'll remember this night forever.
Slash glanced at Pecos, who regarded him with lines of deep incredulity corrugating his forehead.
Hold down the fort, partner.
Slash, what's the plan here?
We done talked about my feelings about plans. Life's too short.
Slash let the girl direct him over to the bar, where he tossed a silver cartwheel to a beefy, mustached gent, one of several apron bartenders, behind the bar, then nodded at the girl and tossed the coin into a tin coffee can perched on a back bar shelf.
This way, handsome.
The girl led Slash on down the bar toward the stairs. As Slash and the girl passed the two Talon Renfro men studying him skeptically, Slash smiled and pinched his hat brim at them again, then gave Pecos a cautious look over his right shoulder. Pecos was then placing his order with another scantily clad young gal holding a tray, a drink server most likely, but he caught Slash's look and returned it in kind. With that look, they'd each agreed that if Pecos heard shooting upstairs, he'd better go to work fast down here. Slash and the girl climbed the stairs. She smiled up at him. Slash smiled back at her, but as soon as they reached the second floor hall, he stopped, turned to the girl, and placed his hands on her shoulders.
Did a man dressed like them six down at the bar come up here with a pretty blonde in a man's clothes?
The doxy scowled up at Slash, deeply incredulous.
What? I don't know.
Just then, Slash heard footsteps on the stairs behind him. He swung around in time to see a fat, jowly blonde man wearing an apron and steel-framed spectacles gain the second-floor landing. He was red-faced and puffing from hauling two steaming steel buckets up the stairs. As he turned off the landing and trudged grimly past where Slash stood with the doxy, pale steam rose into the hall's murk from the buckets. Slash turned his head to stare after the man. He frowned curiously at the two steaming buckets.
This time of the day, whores toil on their backs and don't take baths. Maybe old Talon Renfro wants his girl clean before he...
Strange suspicion crept into Slash's mind. Set up a tingling in his palms. That girl was cagey. She purely was.
Stay here.
Slash began following the beefy gent with the buckets. The beefy gent stopped at the last door on the hall's left side. As Slash strode toward him, gradually increasing his pace, the beefy gent kicked the door.
Mr. Smith, Mrs. Smith, your bath water, good and hot, just like you asked.
Slash frowned, suspicion building in him.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
As Slash walked toward the beefy gent with the two steaming buckets, he closed his hands over his .44s. He had both revolvers half out of their holsters when he heard footsteps in the hall behind him. Ahead of him, the door in front of the beefy gent opened and a man's tall shadow filled the doorway. A handsome fella in a rakish sort of way with long, thick, dark brown hair and a handlebar mustache. He was clad only in long handles and a fat cigar protruded from the right corner of his mouth.
Talon Renfro?
Hey! Talon!
The man in the long handles had just started to step back to let the beefy gent with the water enter his room. Now he stopped and cast his gaze down the hall, his eyes flickering curiously at Slash. Slash glanced behind him to see three of the duster-clad men from downstairs walking toward him side by side, dusters whipping back in the wind of their passage to show holstered six-shooters residing on their hips or thronged on their thighs.
Trouble, Talon! Trouble!
The duster-clad man in the middle of the trio and the others stopped and stretched back their mustached upper lips and reached for their guns. Ahead of Slash, Talon Renfro slammed the door closed in the face of the beefy gent with the water buckets. Beefy gent stumbled backward, hot water slopping over the sides of his buckets. The old refrain rang through Slash's head.
If it weren't for bad luck, we'd have no luck at all.
As he whipped around, filling his hands with his own .44s, before him, guns flashed, barked, and smoked in the hall's murk. Behind Slash, the beefy gent stumbled again as a bullet meant for Slash tore into him and threw him back against the wall at the hall's end. More bullets caromed around Slash, one slicing an icy burn across the side of his neck as he dropped to a knee, raised both of his pretty poppers straight out before him, and returned fire. The Colt's bucking and roaring in his hands, the man in the middle of the trio went down first. But not before triggering one last round, which slammed into Slash's upper left arm. The bullet jerked Slash sharply left and backward over his left hip. Good thing it had, too, or a bullet fired by the man on the left would have likely cored him just above his left eye. Instead, it hammered into the wailing beefy gent, then lolled onto the carpeted hall floor, soaked with the steam and water. Slash sat back on his butt against the pain in his left arm, but extended that left-hand gun and arm straight out before him once more and drilled a round through the chest of the man on his left. Then quickly sighted down the smoking barrel of his right-hand gun on the third man, whom he was surprised to see stumbling back against the wall on the right side of the hall. Slash hadn't realized he'd struck the man with one of his first volleys.
Right impressive, if I do say so myself.
Slash fired at the man again. That bullet missed and carved a hole in the wall to his right.
Ugh, that wasn't.
The third man went down on one knee and swung toward Slash, raising the six-shooter remaining in his left hand. Fortunately, he must have been right-handed. That round fired from his left-hand gun sailed wide of Slash and silenced once and for all the wails of the beefy gent behind him. Slash cut loose with both of his Colts at the same time. One bullet punched a hole in the third man's chest, and the other one ripped into the man's right upraised knee and shredded his broadcloth pants. That bullet was from Slash's left-hand Colt, understandably not as steady, what with the bullet kicking up a white-hot agony in that arm. Suddenly, silence filled the hall. Slash froze. A frozen hand of apprehension splayed across the dead center of his back. He turned his head slowly right to see Talon Renfro aiming two silver-chased, long-barreled Smith & Wessons at him, grinning, showing a full set of pearly white teeth.
You're about to saddle a golden cloud, you son of a buck!
Talon's eyes glittered devilishly as he drew his index finger back against his smithy's triggers. Slash tightened, awaiting the bullet that was about to make his beloved Jay a widow once again. A few minutes ago, Pecos was sitting downstairs, taking a sip of the frothy ale the saloon girl had brought him. Pecos locked gazes with the six train robbers standing at the bar. The two who had faced him and Slash before Slash and the Doxy headed up for the hog pens upstairs were still staring at him. But now the other four had joined in the entertainment. They studied him too, guardedly holding a beer or shot glass in one hand, resting the elbow of the other hand back atop the bar behind them, keeping their free hands free. After swallowing his beer and setting the mug back down on the table...
Sure, Slash. You go up to find the one with Fanny and leave me here with the other six.
If that wasn't just like his owly former train-robbing partner. The man on the right end of the six said something to the man standing to his right while keeping his eyes on Pecos. While keeping his eyes on Pecos, the man to the first one's right relayed the message to the man on his right, who did likewise, keeping his gaze on Pecos until the message was conveyed to all five of the owl hoots standing with their backs to the bar, giving Pecos the woolly eyeball and keeping him from more thoroughly enjoying his beer. Suddenly, the three men on the left side of the pack pushed away from the bar, turned, and filed down the bar toward the stairs.
Now that's more like it.
Pecos took another sip of his beer and enjoyed it a little more this time. Nothing like better odds for making a man enjoying a frothy ale, even a lukewarm one.
Fair's fair, partner.
While Pecos had been sharing stares with the six train robbers, he noted out of the corner of his eyes that the tables around him very gradually had been vacated. Apparently, it had been all too apparent, what with the six men at the bar giving the stink eye to Pecos, who had a sawed-off double bore hanging from a lanyard off his right shoulder, that remaining in their original positions was growing more and more less than healthy. Now that the other three had ventured toward the stairs, where Pecos' partner had ventured less than 2 minutes ago, it must have become even more apparent that a foo-for-all between the remaining four men giving each other the eye cabbage was imminent. Pecos wasn't about to take his eyes off the three remaining at the bar, but he was fairly certain from a few brief eye-shuttling glimpses to his left and right that the once rollicking saloon was now damn near vacated, with maybe only a few handful of interested onlookers looking on from the room's peripheries. Only one of the former three barmen remained, and that man just now slid his bleak gaze between Pecos and the three owl hoots one last time. The barman ducked down behind the bar, now as silent as a funeral.
Trouble, Talon! Trouble!
That kicked Pecos and the three men before him into motion. As the three slapped leather, Pecos leapt up from his chair, kicking it back behind him and aiming the double bore straight out across the table as he rocked both rabbit ear hammers back. Pecos triggered the right barrel between the two men on the trio's right a quarter blink before both men triggered their revolvers. The widely spread buckshot tore into both men chest high, shredding one sleeve of each man's duster, as well as the brown wool vests under their dusters and tearing into the hands that trigger the revolvers, nudging one shot down into the table before Pecos and the other over his right shoulder, close enough to tickle his earlobe. The roar of the shotgun and the two revolvers hadn't even begun to fade before Pecos threw himself to his right, just as the man on the trio's far left triggered his own Bisley 44. The bullet split the air where Pecos had just been standing. Pecos struck the floor on his left shoulder. And as the owl hoot tracked him with his smoking Bisley and tightened his finger around the hog leg's trigger, Pecos raised the 12-gauge and triggered the left barrel. Pecos gave the owl hoot the full benefit of the blast, the buckshot ripping into his chest, lifting him up and over the bar behind him. Nothing hurt like a heart and lung shredded by a 10-gauge buck. Pecos let the shotgun sag down against the floor as he shucked his Russian from the holster, thonged on his right thigh. The two others flopped back against the bar, but they were still in commission, despite the agony the single load of 12-gauge buck had evoked in each scoundrel. And just then, they bore down on Pecos with their hog legs. With his left hand, Pecos pulled a chair down in front of him. One bullet slammed into the seat of the chair just in time to keep him from drilling Pecos a third eye. The bullet fired by the second yowling train robber clipped the end of a wooden leg. Pecos dropped the chair, aimed the Russian over it, then shot the man on the right first, and the man on the left second. While they fell back against the bar again, one triggering his next round into the ceiling, the other one triggering his next round into a window at the front of the saloon, Pecos shot the man on the right again, and then the man on the left again. In turn, the men bounced off the bar and fell in two separate, quivering, bloody heaps along the bar's brass foot rail. In the sudden silence down here in the main saloon hall, Pecos could hear the monsoon storm like thunder on the second floor above his head. He heaved himself heavily to his feet, kicked the chair out of his way, and ran to the stairs.
Flash!
Slash vaguely pondered. Amazing how big and black a .44 maw appeared when it was staring down at you within half a second of sending you to the pearly gates. Or, in Slash's case, likely the smoking gates. Slash vaguely pondered. Slash closed his eyes. No point in watching. The gun roared. Every tensed bone in Slash's body jerked so hard he thought they'd shatter. Wait. How could he draw breath? He was dead. Wasn't he? Slash opened his eyes, found himself staring up at Talon Renfro, who looked as puzzled as Slash felt. Renfro beetled his brows, lowered his .44 and triggered it into the hall floor just right of his right foot, clad in a white wool sock. Stepped forward, taking a halting step with his left foot. As he did, blood oozed from the large round hole in the center of his chest, at the bottom of the V formed by his unbuttoned ball brigand top. Renfro took another halting step forward, this time with his right foot. He got that foot caught on Slash's right boot. Renfro fell to the floor flat on his face to lie as motionless as the fat blonde gent whose only sin had been hauling hot water to Mrs. Smith for a bath. Running footsteps thundered down the hall in the direction of the stairs. They grew louder.
Slash! You all right, Slash?
Suddenly, Pecos stopped in the hall before reaching Slash, who did not turn toward him. Slash was staring at the open doorway of Mr. and Mrs. Smith's room just as Mrs. Smith herself, a.k.a. Fanny Diamond, emerged holding a .44 revolver straight out in both hands. As she slowly stepped out of the room, looking as befuddled as Talon Renfro had, she just as slowly lowered the smoking popper, then dropped it to the floor. Fanny stared down in befuddlement and horror at the dead outlaw she'd just shot in the back. She slid her gaze to Slash. And fell to her knees.
Oh, God! Oh, what have I done? Oh, God! Oh, what have I done?
Fanny looked in sudden disgust at Slash.
I killed Talon to save your life! Scalawag! Oh, God! Oh, no! What have I done?
She lowered her head and pounded her fists against her temples.
Oh, Fanny! What have you done?
Pecos walked over to Slash and stared down at him.
You're hit, partner.
Slash only now felt the pain in his wounded left arm again. As he closed his right hand over his arm, he glanced at the actress.
Oh, God! Oh, what have I done?
And turned back to Slash.
Yeah, but I don't feel half as bad as she does about saving my life.
Pecos pulled a handkerchief from his coat pocket and knelt down to wrap his partner's arm.
Don't worry, she'll get over it.
I doubt it.
Pecos looked at the bawling girl once more.
No, probably not.
Slash and Pecos felt so bad about how bad Fanny felt about having saved Slash's life by killing the man who turned out had helped her shake free of them that they considered turning her loose. In the end, however, they decided they'd come too far to turn back now. Besides, when you got right down to it, why turn loose a so-called actress who felt so consarned bad about saving your life? Slash appreciated that she had saved his life and all, but there were limits to his sympathy. She berated both men as well as herself nearly all the way to Denver, which they reached a week later. A week late for the trial, no doubt, but trials could be rescheduled. So could hangings. And a hanging was what they figured would befall them both if they failed to bring the actress to Luther T. Bleedemso Bledsoe. Speaking of hangings, as it turned out, and much to Slash and Pecos' everlasting exasperation, they learned from Bledsoe that Chaz the Knife Lutz had hanged himself in prison. Yeah.
Happened the day after you boys left Denver. I was up in the mountains on that extended working vacation with my mine owner friend, so I didn't learn about it in time to stop you. Nor Quarles and Thomas. So, well...
Bledsoe looked at the pretty actress standing before him, suddenly appearing happier than she had since Slash and Pecos had first laid eyes on her.
You can turn her loose. And now if you boys and lady will forgive me, I got work to do.
They'd already informed the man they'd taken down the entire Duke Winter gang, slash sharing credit with Pecos. Do you think that got them a single word of thanks from the nasty old cotton-headed gent in the pushchair? Hell no! He simply said curtly that, despite sending Quarles and Thomas as backup, he expected nothing less for the money he paid them and for his keeping the hangman from playing cat's cradle with their heads.
I'll send you your money in Camp Collins when I get around to it.
Bledsoe dismissed them with a veiny old paw. Now they were left wondering what to do with Fanny. They discussed the matter out on the street before the federal building, after Pecos and Bledsoe's alluring secretary, Miss Abigail Langdon, had exchanged mooncalf gazes, of course.
Don't worry, Fanny. We'll buy you a train ticket back to Frisco.
And send the bill to Bleedemso.
Fanny pondered the matter, tucking her upper lip under her bottom teeth. Then she looked at the two men who kidnapped her.
Well, I've heard Camp Collins is nice. More civilized than the mountain gold camps. And now that Duke and Boone are dead, and I've no one left to manage or protect me, maybe I'll head there with you two old scalawags. You'll introduce me around, won't you?
Fanny flicked her fingers against each man's hat in turn and flounced on one hip.
I think it's the least you could do.
Slash and Pecos shared a conferring glance. Pecos arched a brow.
Jay might know what to do with her.
I reckon she would at that.
Slash gave a shrug of his own and turned to Fanny.
I reckon Fanny Diamond's ready for Camp Collins and maybe even the Thousand Delights. The question is...
Slash turned to Pecos.
Is Camp Collins ready for Fanny Diamond?
Scoundrel!
Fanny elbowed Slash in the ribs. Fanny turned to her horse, throwing her hair back.
Come along, boys. My future is waiting.
Fanny climbed into the saddle. Pecos turned to Slash, whose ribs still hurt from the elbow she'd given him. At least she'd left his wounded arm alone this time.
Do we know what we're getting into here, Slash?
The girl reined her mount out into the bustling Denver street.
Oh, I think by now we know exactly what we're getting into here, partner.
Dacos and Slash mounted up. They rode to Camp Collins, with Slash having one hell of a story to entertain his recent bride with, only to find out, once reaching home, that the former J.C. Breckenridge, Myra Thompson, and Delbert Thayer had an interesting tale of their own. Slash and Pecos 5, Sons of Thunder, by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2021, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2026, Graphic Audio LLC, all rights reserved. Narrated by Drew Kopis. With performances by Mark Harrietta as Slash Braddock, James Konacek as the Pecos River Kid, Laura C. Harris as Fanny Diamond, Colleen Delaney as J.C. Breckenridge, and Marnie Penning as Myra Thompson, and Drew Kopis as Delbert Thayer. Also with Damon Alams, Brian Kim McCormick, James Lewis, Eric Messner, Stephen Carpenter, Michael John Casey, Kaylee Alluvian, Chris Tester, Dan Delgado, Scott McCormick, Ian DePriest, Christopher Stinson, Gabriel Michael, Marlon Dance Huey, Joey Sorlis, Julian Daly, Bill Gillette, Bradley Foster Smith, Trilly Young, Andy Brownstein, Gerald Hill, Stephanie Namet Parker, Daniel Yaka, Kimberly Cochran, Ozzy Jacobs, James J. Johnson, Scott Bruffy, and Marissa Clay. Adapted for graphic audio by Sabrielle Augustin. Directed by Sabrielle Augustin. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Marissa Schwabe. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers, Angie Cornette, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you want more high-paced, rootin'-tootin' Western action, keep listening for a sample of Hunter Buchanan 3, Hunter's Moon. Available now in glorious graphic audio.
Another man stood a little lower on the rocks, crouched over the rifle he was aiming out from his right hip, grinning. Axel Hingham, a big bearded man in a buffalo fur coat and black slouch hat, and with a coralie dangling from one corner of his mouth, smiled then too. The glasses on his nose winked in the fading sunlight.
Yep, I don't have them dead to rights.
Hunter knew it was true. A cold stone dropped in his belly. The sound had come from behind Hingham, who wheeled suddenly.
What the hell?
Something tall and broad and cinnamon brown loomed over him, lifting its head. The outlaw leader was so frightened that instead of firing his rifle, he raised it to swing like a club. The bear merely batted it aside, then engulfed Hingham in his long, shaggy arms, backing away.
No! No! Get it off of me!
With the kicking Hingham pressed up snug to the Bruin's chest, hugging him in a sadistic lover's embrace.
God! It's got me! It's got me! I'm going to come there! Don't let it take me!
Oh, good Lord!
The man standing lower down on the rocks swung around to see what Hunter had just seen. A young man with long blonde hair, he fired his rifle, then ran up the rocks, hopscotching boulders. Hunter turned back to the man before him. Just then the man, having been staring at the unlikely spectacle above, remembered Hunter and turned back toward him, eyes wide. He started to raise the Colts again, then, seeing the Henry trained on his forehead, dropped them as though they were hot potatoes. His features were doughy pale, and glancing back over his shoulder, half raised his hands, palm out.
What the hell? What the hell was that?
He acted as though he thought maybe Hunter had something to do with the Bruin's sudden appearance. Hunter sprang forward, whipped the Henry's barrel across the man's right temple, laying him out cold. Then he ran up the rocks, leaping from one boulder to another, his heart racing now. Hunter had the Bruin. He leaped a gap between two boulders, then another. He misjudged the distance. His left boot slipped off the edge of the opposite rock. Down he plunged, losing the Henry into the gap and catching himself at the last second by the very tips of his fingers. He heard the Henry clatter to the gap's bottom. Hunter looked down. It was a 20-foot drop. Hunter dug his fingers into the rock, pulling up with the bulging muscles in his biceps and forearms, gritting his teeth with the effort.
Come on!
He hoisted slowly upward against the face of the rock.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.